This is Warwick Fry in Sydney, November 2006, talking to Stuart Monckton, who is the Latin American Affairs journalist for Green Left Weekly. Good afternoon, Stuart.
Good afternoon.
And, it's been a big week in the United Nations. A few things happening on the... an annual event, I understand, the recognition or the lifting of the blockade against Cuba that's been going on for how long now?
I think this is the 15th straight year that there's been a vote in the General Assembly that the blockade should be lifted.
And what was different about this year?
Well, first of all, I think it was the smallest vote the US got. It was four countries. The US, Israel, Marshall Islands, and another very small country. And so there was that. The other thing that was different was a disgraceful role the Australian government played this year, stepping in to actually move an amendment to the motion that the blockade be lifted, which basically said that, you know, that the UN recognises the legitimate concerns the US has about, you know, human rights in Cuba, and, you know, calling for the release of political prisoners, which I think got 51. That amendment went down, but it got 51 votes. So basically, Australia was in there doing the dirty work for the US, sort of playing the US had their main line, but then they had, you know, Plan B, which was, you know, Australia's role, which was if they couldn't get the main thing up, then at least they could get this justification.
What exactly was this? How did Australia play ball with the US?
Well, basically by preparing this amendment, which was quite clearly prepared with the agreement and no doubt the participation of the US, and basically, if the amendment had passed, it would have provided, even though the motion said that the blockade should have been lifted, it would have nonetheless included the key justification the US used for maintaining the blockade. So in fact, the whole point of the motion would have been lost, because it would have given the US an excuse. The US would have said, yes, well, the motion got up, but look, it includes the very justification that we use for maintaining this blockade, which is about, you know, has cost, you know, $80 billion to Cuba.
And has there been a response from the Cubans, either there or here in Australia?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Cuban response has been very strong. I mean, they condemned, they condemned Australia's amendment. I mean, they refused to accept it and vote for it. And I think, as far as the Cubans are concerned, they believe that Australia was effectively just doing the US's dirty work, and, you know, their position quite justifiably is it's sad to see Australia doing that.
And we've never done this before, have we?
No, this is, I think, you know, a further step in the direction of acting as effectively, you know, a lackey for the US. Yeah.
And the amendment it included some misgivings about the human rights situation in Cuba. Are you plugged into what's going on with human rights? Are there human rights abuses in Cuba?
Well, there are actually quite very severe human rights abuses in Cuba. The severe human rights abuses occur at Guantanamo Bay, the only concentration camp that exists in Cuba, where, you know, and I think that is really the key hypocrisy from what Australia has done, and also the US, but particularly Australia, given that Australia supports this camp, and also, you know, you have an Australian citizen, David Hicks. He's been held 4 years without trial. He's been tortured. His human rights abuses have been completely ignored and overridden, and the Australian government could stop that. So really, the Australian government and the US government, before you can even talk about the question of, well, what is the actual human rights situation inside Cuba, are there political prisoners, all the rest of it, the starting point has got to be, no matter what's happening in Cuba, the last people who have anything, any right to say the slightest thing about it are the US and Australia, because anything that they've done is worse. No one, I mean, Amnesty International, for example, does say that there are political prisoners in Cuba, but it doesn't put any kind of equal sign between that and Guantanamo Bay, which it calls for the complete closure of, et cetera.
Do they have sort of figures on what they call political prisoners?
They say that there's, I think, 72 or 73 political prisoners. However, I think that The first thing is that MC actually at least acknowledges that it does say that the role of the blockade. It says that basically the blockade should be lifted, and that if the blockade was lifted, the conditions for what they consider to be human rights abuses in Cuba would be a lot better. However, I think one thing that MC I think ignores is the fact that the overwhelming majority of the people that they see are political prisoners that. They went jailed by the government. They were jailed by the judiciary, which is independent in Cuba. They received trials according to Cuban law, and they were charged under very specific parts of Cuban law, which related not to the fact that they opposed the government, not to the fact that they, you know, organised against it or anything like that. And there's still, you know, other figures in the opposition in Cuba that are free and, you know, say whatever they want, and then they're not in jail. It's because it was the result of a years of investigation, and they presented a large amount of evidence, irrefutable evidence, that in fact what these people were charged with was accepting money from the United States, in particular a particular organization, the National Endowment for Democracy, which is also working in Venezuela, and they are funded by the US Congress. And basically the charges relate to the fact that they accept money from the US government in order to overthrow the government, which is a crime in the US and pretty much everywhere else.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Venezuela there, because I read a rather disturbing report that the NUS or a person in the NUS, or the National Union of Students, which as we know has just been made voluntary, obstructed a motion to support a week of solidarity with Venezuela on the grounds that Hugo Chavez did not tolerate opposition parties, and you know, it sounded sort of about as specious as Cuba's political prisoners. What do you know about that?
Well, yeah, I do know that the National Union of Students was, you know, asked by the executive was asked by a member of the executive, Rachel Evans, who's a female queer officer and an activist in Socialist Alliance, who put the motion, that it support this International Day of Action to lead up to the elections against US aggression. It wasn't even saying that, you know, you have to support every single thing Chavez does or anything like that, just that the Venezuelans have a right to determine their own future. And NUS, what's ironic about the refusal is that NUS did support that in May 20, which was the last International Day of Solidarity that happened with Venezuela. They did actually endorse it. And what's more, at the last NUS conference, there was a policy that got up that said, okay, the official position of the National Union of Students is we express solidarity with Venezuela and the changes, and we support them against US aggression. So it is quite ironic, and it sounds like there wasn't any discussion. Discussion was cut off, but justification for that did come from Rose Jackson, who is a member of the Labour Party, that's something along the lines of, well, there's, you know, attacks on opposition groups inside Venezuela. But it doesn't sound like there was even... She didn't really explain that. She may have just heard something, you know, but the fact was that then refused to allow any space, any discussion for any kind of clarification.
Stuart, you've been to Venezuela. Did you see any signs of this kind of activity on the part of the government? What is the situation with opposition groups in Venezuela at the moment?
Well, there's 28 candidates in the presidential elections. Only one of them is Chavez, so that's a reasonably good indication that there aren't any attacks at all on opposition groups inside Venezuela. They remain completely free to operate. Most of the private media overwhelmingly is not just anti-Chavez, but very virulently anti-Chavez, and they are right now campaigning very, very strongly against Chavez. But what makes this even more remarkable is that this is the case even after these opposition forces, including the media, organised a military coup which overthrew Chavez, gave the orders for him to be killed. He only wasn't killed because the soldiers refused to carry the order out, and dissolved the Constitution, dissolved the Supreme Court, dissolved the elected National Assembly, dissolved the pro-poor laws, and set up a dictatorship. Okay, it didn't last, but that's what, even after that, and there's very few countries in which, even after that, the media, which were crucial to organising this, the opposition forces which carried it out, would then be allowed to continue as before and run an election. The main opposition candidate, Manuel Rosales, supported the coup. This footage, the pro-Chavez election ads, include, you know, to sort of say, who is this guy? It's him shaking hands with Pedro Carmona, who was installed as dictator during the coup. So they're just saying, well, you know, think about this guy when you vote for him.
You also shut down the judiciary and a few other constitutional... yeah, that's very interesting, Stuart. And what sort of effect is this having in Venezuela? I mean, Chavez is coming up for re-election very soon. How's the campaign going?
As hard as this, I guess, tell from afar, although obviously Green Left Weekly, we have our bureau there, it sounds like it is going, you know, the Chavez campaign is going well. I mean, the polls, independent polls, give him anywhere up to, Miami University poll gave him basically about 59%. In the polls, and they tend to give Rosales anywhere between about 17% and up to maybe 39%. So on that level, I think it's quite obvious Chavez is going to win, and it's really not hard to see why when the economy is really booming, and partly as a direct result of government policy too. I mean, social spending is through the roof. The oil wealth has been significantly redistributed, you know, with poverty going down from about 40% to 30% households in poverty, according to the World Bank, who aren't necessarily friendly to Chavez, but they recognise that. Extreme poverty has halved, 20% down to about 10%. And with all of these gains, it's no surprise, I think, that you don't have to be, you know, a genius to figure out that Chavez is going to win these elections.
Yeah, it's a track record I think any of our politicians would envy.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this will be his, if he wins this, it'll be his 11th, the 11th straight national electoral victory for pro-Chavez forces, which since 1998, which is an astonishing record, and really does make a mockery of the claims, including from Alexander Downer, that there's not much democracy inside Venezuela. And there are elections that are recognised by the OAS has sent observers, the Carter Center, the UN, the EU has sent observers. So these are elections that are registered as fair.
And all this without any obvious repression of human rights or denial of...
No, well, that's right. There's no evidence that's coming down from the government. And certainly when you go there, people completely free to speak their minds, whether they're for Chavez or whether they're against Chavez, or, you know, and often you get people who are for Chavez but, you know, extremely critical of large amounts of things, and they'll openly, you know, launch into everything that's on their mind and is bothering them. Yeah.
Well, thanks very much, Stuart.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Venezuela Analysis Radio. I'm Michael Fox, and this is the latest news from Venezuela for the week of November 2nd through November 9th. First off, in U.S.-Venezuelan relations, Venezuela will provide heavily discounted heating oil to just under 40,000 low-income families in Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. this winter. This will be the first time that Washington-area families benefit from the program, which is still being negotiated by Citgo, the oil company controlled by the Venezuelan government, and the Citizens Energy Corporation, a nonprofit group funded by Joseph P. Kennedy II. Although some communities in the U.S. reconsidered Citgo's discounted oil offer after Chavez's devil remarks before the U.N. General Assembly, a growing number of states along the eastern seaboard and throughout the U.S. have accepted and will be receiving discounted heating oil this winter. With less than a month ago before the Venezuelan December 3rd presidential elections, both Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez Frias and his major opponent Manuel Rosales held large demonstrations last week in Caracas. Chavez was greeted by thousands of supporters in the barrio Petare, which is considered by some to be the largest in Latin America. He began the tour at around 4 in the afternoon when he opened a new health clinic associated with the community health program Mission Barrio Dentro. After opening the clinic, Chavez toured the barrio in a truck, waving at the crowds to show his appreciation for the turnout. On the same day, it was announced by the government that workers in the public sector would be receiving their Christmas bonus earlier this year, that is, in November, before the election. Although the government says that this is not an attempt to buy votes, it has brought harsh criticism from the opposition. Last Saturday, thousands of supporters also came out to rally behind opposition candidate Manuel Rosales in a large march in Caracas. The march, which was entitled 26 Kilometers for 26 Million Venezuelans, ran from El Paraíso Barrio in western Caracas to Petare in the east of the city. Rosales called on Venezuelans to think about their children, get out and vote, and expressed his desire for unity during the holidays. The Venezuelan holiday season begins the first week in November as opposed to the week following Thanksgiving in the United States. Still in election news, one of Manuel Rosales' campaign managers presented a video last week which showed Venezuelan state oil company President Rafael Ramirez calling for the company's managers to stand firm behind President Chavez. In the speech, Ramirez told a gathering of the company's top management that all employees should support the president, and if they didn't support such a policy, then they should leave in favor of someone who supports the Bolivarian Project, as Chavez's movement is known. Ramirez went on to say that the oil company's internal norms against political activism within the company should be eliminated. According to Gerardo Blyde, who presented the surreptitiously recorded video, such exhortation is illegal because it violates the Constitution's provisions that state employees cannot be involved in partisan activities. Chavez and government officials immediately defended Ramirez's speech, saying that it was done in the context of opposition efforts to sabotage the oil industry and that it was not a call for employees to campaign for Chavez, but to support the government's policies. Vice President Vicente Rangel stated that despite his disagreement with Blyde's use of Ramirez's statements, any court case on this issue will not be obstructed. With less than a month before the Venezuelan presidential vote, President Hugo Chavez has a 22-point lead over his leading rival, according to a poll commissioned by the state oil company and released this Tuesday. The U.S.-based pollster Evans McDonough Company and the Venezuelan company Consultores 3011 found 57% support for Chavez versus 35% for challenger Manuel Rosales in what they said was the largest Venezuelan election poll this year. Chavez, upon hearing of the results, predicted a big victory and said the backing comes in spite of an opposition media campaign to confuse Venezuelans. The poll indicated that Venezuelans' perceptions of how the country is faring have changed little since they voted overwhelmingly to keep Chavez in power 2 years ago in a recall referendum. Comparing the latest results with a poll from August 2004, Venezuelans today appeared to be more staunchly aligned either with Chavez or the opposition. The two most popular descriptions of Chavez were best president, followed by dictator. Evans McDonough and Consultores 3011 are planning to conduct another poll about a week before the elections, as well as an exit poll on the day of the vote. In domestic news, shortly after inaugurating the first new Venezuelan railroad in 70 years, Venezuela's President Chavez inaugurated the Los Teques metro line last Friday. Los Teques is located in the hills to the southwest of Caracas, and the new line covers the nearly 10-kilometer route in 15 minutes. The new metro line will transport 15,000 people a day with a capacity of 800 passengers per train until the finalization of construction of a second track at the end of next year, when its daily transportation capacity will quadruple to 60,000 people a day. The extension of the Caracas Metro to El Tambor Station in Los Teques is just the first of various additions to the Los Teques line, which are scheduled to be completed by 2010 and will cover over 11 kilometers and 5 new stations. Still in domestic news, during a campaign event on Sunday, Venezuela's President Chavez announced the creation of 2 new social programs known as Missions, which will dramatically expand Venezuela's higher education and improve dental health care for the poor. Chavez explained that Mission Alma Mater will expand existing university degrees and also create new ones. Already just under $500 million has been allocated towards the construction of 16 polytechnic universities and 8 technological university institutes in order to achieve these goals. A second new program, Mission Smile, will provide dental prosthetics for poor Venezuelans in need. It is estimated that as many as 10 million parts and complete pieces may need to be manufactured, and new dental laboratories will be launched for this program. In other plans, Chavez announced that if re-elected on December 3rd, he would unveil a new 14-year plan, which would begin on February 2nd and end in 2021, a year Chavez has often referred to as the year by which the Bolivarian Revolution will be complete. And in social movement news, a national meeting of the Urban Land Committees, or CTU, which are instrumental in Venezuela's urban land reform, was held this weekend just outside of Caracas. Because of the autonomy and participation, the meeting was described by those in attendance as the first of its kind. Approximately 500 spokespersons attended the meeting from around the country, representing their local CTUs. These spokespersons were chosen during 200 local and regional meetings which took place throughout the country, in which over half of Venezuela's 6,000 CTUs participated. The 3-day event was loaded with a rigorous schedule, as participants split up into 3 large working groups in order to elaborate proposals on the 3 topics of debate: the CTU's relationship with government institutions, with the local community, and with each other. Among the many proposals which came out of the working groups were the creation of a school for youth and community work, the creation of more CTU community media, and the creation of a land bank. One of the most universal hopes from participants is that they will be able to accelerate the massive turnover of land titles to the community. 12 spokespersons were chosen on the final day of the meeting in order to synthesize the various proposals into a final document, which is expected to be ready by late January. Those in attendance plan on presenting the final results to President Chavez. And that's all for the news from Venezuela for the week of November 2nd through November 9th. For more information or for the complete stories, you can visit us at VenezuelaAnalysis.com. Reporting from Caracas for Venezuela Analysis, I'm Michael Fox.
This is another podcast from the Ratbag Radio Network.
This is Venezuela Viewpoint on November the 11th, 2006. Just reporting from Revolutionary Venezuela. This is Carl Winter and Jim McElroy. We're just reporting on some recent events that have happened in the last week here. First of all, the most exciting news was the International Media Conference hosted by President Hugo Chavez this week. It had been the first one for some time, which I attended on behalf of Green Left Weekly. And they decided there would be 8 questions this time, and I was fortunate enough to have my name pulled out of a hat and to have the right to ask a question. So it was all very exciting, and Hugo Chavez is incredible. He gave a press conference for 4 hours answering different aspects of these questions. There was a journalist from Washington, from Russia, from the French agency, from Spain and from Italy, and as well as other countries. First of all, he came along when he entered the room. It was in Miraflores. He introduced himself to all the 8 journalists who were selected. And so I took the opportunity to give him a letter from Eulalia, Whitney Reyes, who is in Brisbane, member of the Australian-Venezuelan Solidarity Committee, who had asked us for a long time ago to give this letter to Hugo Chavez, requesting that they set up a mission sin borders, so that they could have an office to work with the solidarity movement in Caracas. But anyway, so I had the opportunity to give him that, and then he said, to make sure it wasn't confused with Austria, I said Australia, where there's lots of kangaroos. So he said, oh, and there's also lots of nice people like you, Coral. So he shook my hand and gave me a kiss on the cheek. So I was really privileged. Anyway, so when I get up to ask the question, I asked him about, first of all, about a possibility of organising, a method of organising all solidarity groups around the world, because now people in the West understand more about the Bolivarian process and support it wholeheartedly. And so I thought there was a need to coordinate this work. But also I invited him to come to Australia, and he replied that he would like to come to Australia. He had never been to Australia, and he would like to meet the Australian people and who support the Bolivarian process. So that was really interesting. And also then I asked him about what is his next step in the process for introducing socialism in the 21st century, because he said that he's going to concentrate on moral and ethical issues when they gain power on February the 2nd, socialist ethics and morals. And at the last 8 years, it had been a bridge from the old society to a new society. So it was very interesting. There'll be more discussion of that later on in our articles. Secondly, we've undergone massive organisation for the Australian-Venezuela Solidarity Network, the brigade that's coming to Venezuela in the next 2 weeks. There's 36 members on the brigade, and they'll be observing the elections on December 3rd. We're hoping to get official recognition by the CNE Council. And they'll be looking at the missions, the community councils, and they'll be divided into two groups. One group will go to Coro and another group will go to Barquisimeto. So we're looking forward to great anticipation and optimism for a very successful brigade. And we're still working on the itinerary. It depends to a great extent on the date of the last march, big march in Caracas that will close the Chavez campaign. Internationally, well, it's been a great week because we can celebrate the victory of the FSLN in Nicaragua with the election of President Daniel Ortega. It's a blow to President Bush and U.S. imperialism, and another ally for President Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, in Central and Latin America. Venezuela is going to be able to help Nicaragua with cheap oil, and hopefully also extra trade with Nicaragua, and hopefully this will markedly improve the situation of many poor people in Nicaragua in the coming years. Nicaragua has already declared its support for Cuba and that it's saying that it's not negotiable. And secondly, the defeat of the Republicans in the US Congress, everybody will be aware of that by now. It was welcomed by Chavez, and it's possibility that they will decrease the hostility to Venezuela in the short term, but not in the long term. They can't do that because of the demands of capitalism and the demands of their oil needs. But in the short term, I think maybe things will ameliorate here in Venezuela because of that massive defeat of the Republicans, although we shouldn't have any illusions in the US Democrats. They'll follow out the same policy. Bush is now crippled in his international and domestic policies, and he will be less able to pursue a militaristic policy in Latin America. And the defeat of the United States in Iraq is absolutely assured. So it's been quite a week of victories, I think, overall in the international and area, and also in Venezuela here. The election campaign is going on full swing with massive caravans, Chavista meetings in Mérida and this weekend in other parts of Caracas. So I'll say goodbye for the moment and signing off from Revolutionary Venezuela.
Venezuela Viewpoint is another podcast from the Ratbag Radio Network. That's ratbagradionetwork.blogspot.com. ratbagradionetwork.blogspot.com.
There are a million reasons to listen to Odeo, and this is one.
Hello, I'm Roberto Ojeda. I'm in Venezuela as part of the Australian-Venezuela Solidarity Network. The Australian-Venezuela Solidarity Network, since 2005, has organised three very successful international solidarity brigades to Venezuela. Our first, being in August of last year, coincided with the International Festival of Youth and Students. Then, we also organised a solidarity brigade to coincide with the World Social Forum in January, and then also on May 1 to coincide with the International Workers' Day mass mobilizations and activities held here in Venezuela. At that event, one of our representatives from the Australian-Venezuela Solidarity Network and also member of the Electrical Trades Union, John Cleary, was able to speak at the May 1 demonstration to some 1 million workers. In this brigade, which will coincide with the presidential elections of December the 3rd, we have 36 participants. This brigade, in some ways, will be one of the most interesting. That is that it will coincide with a political period in Venezuela, which is very much going to be a turning point, not only for Venezuela, but also for the rest of Latin America. over the last couple of weeks, we've had some more victories for the left and progressive forces in Latin America, with Lula winning in Brazil, Ortega in Nicaragua, and then we've also had the Democrats in the Senate of the United States and also in the House of Representatives taking the majority of seats. All this, even though all represent quite different political currents, all reflect one thing, that there is a clear voice among the people of Latin America, including the US, who are tired of the neoliberal politics and the role that US imperialism is playing in the region and also throughout the world. It was very clear that the vote against Bush was very much a vote against the war in Iraq. And very much so, a similar situation occurred in Nicaragua and also to some extent also in Brazil. That is, there is a movement to the left in this continent, a movement to the left that has not really been seen for over 20 years. It is incredibly significant, the political period that we face in Latin America at the moment. And Venezuela is very much at the forefront of this movement. Over the last couple of months, there has been very much a tidal wave which continues to sweep through Venezuela, and this tidal wave is led by the Chavez forces, or the forces of change as they're called. This is an alliance of a variety of different political parties and also social organisations who have all come behind Chavez as a presidential candidate. It's also increasingly clear that the situation in Venezuela is coming to a head. The opposition is increasingly desperate that they will lose the elections and will actually face a situation of being in total political isolation. This means the situation in Venezuela also is very tense. It's become clear since I've arrived here in Venezuela and after my experiences in Venezuela last year, which were for about 6 months, the political situation continues to change in the positive. That is, there has been numerous amounts of advances in the revolutionary process, even in that space of 1 year. But also the elections of December the 3rd will also open up a whole new political period in Venezuela. That's what is becoming increasingly clear. No matter who you talk to, the Frente Francisco de Miranda, some of the trade unions, the social organisations, the political parties, people involved in a variety of different social missions, all say one thing, that what they will see and what they expect to see after December 3rd is a massive increase in the changes that Venezuela has seen to date. That is, that what we can see and what we can predict is that there will be even a much further and deeper radicalization and deepening of the revolutionary process that has unfolded in Venezuela since 1998, but has particularly taken on a very clear radical and even socialist trajectory since about 2002, after the failed coup against Chavez. The development of the Bolivarian Revolution in a socialist trajectory is becoming increasingly clear. This can be seen in two fronts. On the first is the whole reorganization of the economy and political system. And secondly is the actual further development of the revolutionary consciousness and also socialist consciousness and socialist ethic is also being increasingly clear. However, it also must be said that this process is very much at its very early stages. That is, that even though the Chavez leadership is very clear in terms of where it wants to take the revolutionary process, there's still a lot to be done, both on a political, economic level, but also on a social consciousness level. However, that's where the move is heading. That is, there is increasing changes in the economy to take it away from the ruling elite. This can be seen not only in terms of the enormous development of cooperatives and also occupied factories and also the reorganisation of the national economy already, which has already been under state ownership. Also is the enormous amount of campaign that has developed in Venezuela over the development of socialist consciousness. That is, this has developed over the last couple of years and has been very conscious in the use of many of the writings of Ernesto Che Guevara and also other Cuban leaders of the Cuban Revolution. That is, they understand that to actually achieve socialism, you also have to have socialist consciousness. That is, that socialism is more than just a change in the economy and in the political system, but also a whole change in the actual political way of thinking of a whole population, of a whole country. And so that's where we see the process happening at the moment. That is, that it's on the one hand taken on the United States, taken on the ruling elites of Venezuela, and also other ruling elites of Latin America. But also, it's also a movement that's actually harnessing the actual opposition to these elites, not only in Venezuela, but also Latin America. It is at a very early stage, but one thing can be sure, that the population of Venezuela is very clear about what it wants. It's very clear in terms of its trajectory. And so with that in mind, it will be very hard for the ruling elites of Venezuela, the United States, or any others in Latin America to halt this revolutionary process.